So good morning. This lecture is all about compassion and the luminous mirror wisdom of the awakened ones. As a bonus, you'll get to hear a little bit more about Green Gulch. Compassion is the feeling of being moved or motivated, or maybe a desire or an aspiration to alleviate someone's suffering. I found that particularly interesting because often people say, well, I feel for someone's pain, now what do I do about it? That's a different question. Compassion is the desire or aspiration or feeling of being moved or motivated to alleviate someone's suffering. It's a separate step to do something. In Buddhism, compassion turns out to be an aspiration or a vow to free all beings from suffering. And that aspiration or vow to free all beings from suffering means to free everyone from self-clinging, from the sense that our self is separate, permanent, that it has its own being, that it's a thing. And we vow to do this every time after the lecture, and we'll do that today. We say, beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Remember, all beings means all beings. So don't forget that's yourself. You know, when we say I vow to save them, them means us. Them is us. Sounds like a pogoism. From that comic strip Pogo that I know some people are fans of here. Or were when it was going on. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. That's to free them from suffering, self-clinging. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. What delusions? Whose delusions? The delusions that beings have. The delusions that we're separate. The delusions that clinging to self is going to be useful, the delusion that we're permanent, etc. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. What are the Dharma gates? They're the teachings about impermanence, emptiness, and no self. And the Dharma gates are basically everything that happens. Anytime that something happens and we can be awake to it and to a way that frees us, that's a Dharma gate. Buddha's way is to go through every Dharma gate. I vow to become it. Can you really go through every Dharma gate? All these are impossible, right, on their face. And yet we aspire to do them. We aspire to be compassionate to all beings, to end all delusions, to go through all Dharma gates, and to be Buddha, to become Buddha's way. And to me, that has come to mean, and somehow this connected recently, that it means to be compassionate to every single body-mind, which I almost said every single thought, I don't think that's deep enough. Reb Anderson, when he gave some talks about this at Green Gulch, uses the term body-mind. So body and mind, body, mind. So that encourages us not just to be compassionate to this thought, I'm suffering, my friend is suffering, my family is suffering, the people in Ukraine are suffering. Not just compassionate to the thought, but to the feeling that arises in our body, and to whatever tension arises in our body, and to the knee suddenly hurting when you have the thought of compassion, because it's too hard to think about how awful things are right now for people, or some other pain you don't want to think about, and so your knee starts hurting. So it's be compassionate to the body mind that cares for others and the body mind that's distracted. And those things happen just like that, right? So how does one do that? The image that has come to mind recently for me, it's actually a fairly standard in Buddhism, is a mirror. A mirror that doesn't judge anything. Everything that comes before the mirror is reflected. There's also a similar image of the still pond in which everything is reflected. I remember reading long, long ago, when I was basically a literary Zen enthusiast. You know, I didn't meditate much, but I read a lot about Zen. This was many years ago, the question was brought up, and I don't remember for sure where I read this. I think it was in D.T. Suzuki's books, not Suzuki, Shunryo Suzuki, our founder, but the scholar D.T. Suzuki. Anyway, I believe it was there that I read it, where the question was brought up of, you know, in this really turbulent, competitive world, how do we exercise Zen? How do we practice Zen? And the suggestion was made, be like a still pond, reflect everything. And I remember at the time that was whoosh, like, I tried to understand that, but I thought, well, does that mean be like everybody else? You're reflecting the world, so you're being like everybody else. Is that what it means? But of course not. Of course it doesn't mean be like everybody else. Of course it doesn't mean conform. It doesn't mean be a doormat. It means be with everything without judging. And this does tie into an experience, as I promised I'd talk a little bit more about Green Gulch. During the first 5 days of of the intensive that lasted for 21 days that I went to in January, we were under quarantine. We could only come out of our rooms for zazen or food, and we had to wear masks whenever we weren't in our room, even outdoors. The residents who had been there for a long time and were in basically a COVID bubble. This was during the Omicron infection. I know it's still fresh in people's minds now, but you know, if you listen to this later in the recording, the Omicron infection was really frightening to a lot of people, and for good reason, the Omicron variant of COVID. So it was during that time, and so we were being super careful at Green Gulch Farms. And so the residents were allowed to chant, but people like me who are guests had to wear masks and just listen. So that was quite an experience. One, it was hard not to chant if I knew the chant. And two, it meant I was really paying attention to the words in a way that I might not have otherwise, you know, because there's competing interests when you're a part of the group, you know, blending your voice with others, following, making sure you're following along, your speed, your tempo. Is it almost time to bow or take some other act? You know, like a lot of things tend to go on in our minds. But there was none of that because I was able to just really listen to the words. And so there were also classes during this 5 days. Every other day there was a class that Rev Anderson, one of the teachers there, taught. And the class was on, let me make sure I have this right, a writing by Dogen called Guidelines for Studying the Way, which in Japanese is Gakudo Yojin, Yojin Shu. Gakudo Yojin Shu. And what he talked about, what Reb talked about, was that Dogen, according to Reb's take on it, Dogen says there are two methods for direct realization in our practice, for hitting the target or being hit by the target directly in the moment. And those two methods are wholehearted sitting. Anyone surprised? The other method is through inquiry, Dharma inquiry with the teacher. And Dharma inquiry with the teacher has a sense of play, a sense of exploration. It can go from the rational to the emotional, but the idea is that you're wholeheartedly hitting the target by really being there with your teacher, and that there's, and that the teacher is doing the same with you. So the very distinction between student and teacher can blur in those conversations. So back to the chanting, I wasn't sure which one this was, which direct method this was, and I assumed it was one of the direct methods. It was either Zazen or it was Dharma talk with the teacher, a Dharma inquiry with the teacher. I have always, when I've given Zazen instruction, if I gave any of you Zazen instruction your first time, you may have heard me say this. I've been saying for years that everything we do here is a form of meditation. That's why they're called the forms. And I started to doubt myself for having said that. I started to think, well, maybe it's not all meditation. Maybe our chanting is actually Dharma inquiry with the teacher. There's somebody leading the chant. There's a doshi. Usually there are priests who are enacting the rituals. And there are words that are teaching us. Whether we're conscious of them or not, they're going into our subconscious, and then we're responding to them in some way. Sometimes a word in a chant will make us uncomfortable, and if we're really paying attention, we'll go, why do I feel like that? How do I feel? Notice our bodies. Other times it'll feel uncomfortable, but we don't really know why, or sometimes we'll feel great about it. You know, I love this chant, you know, like, yeah, I have my favorites, where every word of them just, I want to pay attention when I'm doing them. Even if I'm the Kokyo, I just want to, you know, let every word flow over and be understood. So there was after Reb talked about the two methods of inquiry in one of the early classes when it was still during quarantine, the 5 days of quarantine, I got up and I basically expressed my feelings and my questions. And I basically said, it seems to me now, and I pretty much told the story in a slightly shorter form that I just was telling here. I said, I've been telling people in Zazen instruction that everything is a form of meditation, but I think maybe that we're learning the method of Dharma inquiry with the teacher when we're chanting. And Reb confirmed my understanding that that's what he thought it was too. Or maybe he felt that that was my level, that he wanted to encourage me with this insight. You've got to be careful not to take something a teacher says to you in the moment, by the way, as the truth about them. So I didn't take it that way, but I took it as a very useful way to see our chants. at some point later during Zazen, I noticed that it seemed like, and I don't remember whether the words came first or the image came first, but it seemed to me like the whole universe, well, that sounds too big. The things around me were being reflected in a mirror, and everything was a mirror and simultaneously being reflected. Because I was really working with a lot of what Reb had said. He'd been talking a lot about compassion and compassion being present in our wholehearted sitting as well as in our Dharma inquiry. And so as that sort of seeped in, it felt like I was part of a mirror, and there was some effort in it as I sat up straight and would notice my breath. And the words came up, luminous mirror wisdom. And I thought, that's from a chant. But I wasn't sure which chant it was from. And so next time we were chanting, I listened, I kept my ears open, and I don't remember if it was the same night or another day that we did the chant, but it's from, before I give the big reveal, does anybody know which chant that's from? Raise your hand if you think you know. No? It does sound familiar to folks, right? You've heard the phrase luminous mirror wisdom? Yes? No? Raise your hand if you've heard the phrase luminous mirror wisdom. Good. Yeah, so that was how I was. I was all, where does that come from? And then next time we did the well-being ceremony, the Inmei Juku Kanan Gyo, I heard it. And we do it every Thursday here. We say, as part of the dedication, we say, may all awakened beings extend with true compassion their luminous mirror wisdom. And what I realized later is lovely about that is that we're saying that awakened beings have true compassion. They extend with true compassion their luminous mirror wisdom. So there's compassion that all beings have, and that they and that with that true compassion comes luminous mirror wisdom. So in our well-being service, we're dedicating it to wisdom and compassion, a luminous mirror wisdom. And to me, what I get from that is that how compassion and wisdom are linked here is through seeing compassion, not just on a sentimental level, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But seeing it on a Dharma level, which Reb also talked about in his talks, seeing it in the Dharma level, in other words, freeing all beings from self-clinging, from a sense of permanence, etc. So it's, and I think it goes beyond that. But I think that's a good place to start. There's those levels of compassion. And I mentioned this in another talk about the when Lisa asked, Lisa, you asked for an example of Dharma inquiry with the teacher as an example of direct realization. And I'm going to, forgive me, but give this example again. A person asked after one of Reb's Q&As after a class, asked why Reb was using a whiteboard. And the student asked why Reb hadn't written the word pranya for wisdom as part of explaining something. And the student asked why he hadn't written karuna, pranya karuna, because the student said, yeah, the early Buddhists were so much into wisdom, into pranya, but they weren't compassionate. And that was a problem. And instead of writing it on the board or or asking, can you clarify, or something like that. Instead, he focused on something in the tone of the student's voice and said, you seem very upset about this. What's going on? And the student tried to explain a little bit more, and there was back and forth until the student realized that they were feeling upset. And they had an insight into what was going on in them in the moment beyond what was in their head about the two sides, prajna, karuna, wisdom and compassion. And when Reb had that meeting with them, Reb said, so you wanted me to write karuna on here? And he did. He wrote karuna on the whiteboard. So that's an example of this Dharma inquiry with the teacher, an example of how there's mirroring going on. When the teacher's so open to the student that the teacher sees that the student has a deeper level to their question, even deeper than the student had, and then the student sees themselves through the teacher, and then the lines blur between teacher and student. It's just two people meeting. And that's also an example of hitting the target directly, being present in the moment for one another and practicing with one another. So I mentioned that Reb said that there are two levels of compassion, but that would be a misstatement. He actually said there are three. There's sentimental compassion, which we're all familiar with, where we want to help somebody in need. And the second level is dharmic level of compassion, where we want to free them from suffering, where we want to apply the teaching. And there's another level, which is the absolute or empty level of compassion, where we see that there's no self to suffer in the first place. And rather than trying to explain that, I'm going to talk about a couple of poems and give yet another Green Gulch related anecdote related to them. So this is going to be very much a Cliff Notes version of a part of what's called a Platform Sutra, which is about the sixth patriarch, Wei Ning. Mary and I were planning to study this together sometime before I went to Green Gulch, like in December, but things happened. I'm not sure what all it was, but I got very busy with work. She got a cold and didn't feel up to it. And I don't know, for some reason, we didn't end up studying it yet, but I started reading the text that she had recommended. And that was already in my mind by the time I went to Green Gulch. Even this began Dharma inquiry with the teacher, even though I wasn't really aware of the concept in the way that Reb explained it or the way Dogen explained it. The story, anyway, of the in the Platform Sutra that you may have heard this before, and I had as well, the fifth patriarch, Hong Jin, was asked his assembly for poems to show their level of understanding of the Dharma, their level of enlightenment. The head student, Xin Su, knew he didn't quite have it, knew that he didn't feel confident in his realization, but he knew that everyone expected him to have the best poem. The expectation was so high that no one else even tried. In the meantime, Hui Ning, who was actually not even a formal student, he had been relegated to the kitchen because he was illiterate from the country. The teacher, Hong Jin, had seen something in him, but didn't think that everyone was, or maybe he didn't see quite enough, but he allowed him to anyway, he wasn't one of the students, but he had a deeper understanding. So that the head monk gave it a shot, and he wrote on the wall his poem, which was this: "Our body is the Bodhi tree, and our mind the mirror bright. Carefully we wipe them hour by hour, and let no dust alight." Wang Jian later saw it and said, "That's pretty good. I think people should practice with that." And he had people light incense to it and respect the poem. And I think it's a great poem. I mean, it came to me. You know, I remembered the poem at this time that I was exploring luminous mirror wisdom, exploring that this image had come to me. And it felt like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm sitting up straight. So our body is the Bodhi tree and our mind a mirror bright. So that's like the body is sitting up straight. It's in Zazen, paying attention to the breathing, paying attention to the posture. And our mind a mirror bright. He says our mind, and I've read and agreed that this means the universe. Everything is a mirror. And yet hour by hour, carefully we wipe them hour by hour. We're taking care of our body, we're taking care of the mind. We're taking care of our compassion by reflecting things without judgment. We're taking care of our body by sitting. And let no dust alight. And the dust are the things that obscure the true nature of the universe and our being with it compassionately. So yeah, great poem. It to me, it manifests, it goes beyond the sentimental and it goes to the Dharma level, because it's about freeing all beings. But what happened next in the story was that Hui Ning asked somebody had heard about it and seen the incense being offered to it, and asked for one of the students to read it to him. And Hui Ning said, "Well, I have a poem. Could you write it down?" And his poem, which was written down next to the head student's poem, Hui Ning's poem, was, "There is no Bodhi tree, nor stand of mirror bright. Since all is void, where can the dust alight?" And the teacher, the fifth patriarch, Hung Jin, saw that and said, "Actually, that's it." And he found out who did it and gave him Dharma transmission. He also told him, "You better leave because people are going to want to kill you now. They all think they're highly educated and I'm giving Dharma transmission to this illiterate person, but you know, you better leave." But he did ferry him across the river. He took good care of him. And he told him to sit with it as long as he needed to before he taught, sit with his understanding. So what's all this about then? "There is no Bodhi tree, nor stand of mirror bright. Since all is void, where can the dust alight?" To me, that's probably what Rev was talking about by the empty level of compassion. And I had a talk with a practice discussion with Jiryu, who I don't know how many of you know him personally. I didn't know him before Green Gulch, but he is a priest there. He was Tonto at the time, and he's now the abbot. They just had a changeover from Fu Schroeder. Forgive the inside baseball stuff. He is the son of Marge and David, who are taking care of Rosie, to bring it closer to home. So Jiryu and I had a practice discussion while I was at Green Gulch. I told him, "You know, I feel like I'm polishing the mirror." And I reminded him of, he didn't need much reminding, he knew exactly what I was talking about Wei Ning's story. And normally I wouldn't probably tell you what had happened in a practice discussion because it's often so much more powerful when you don't talk about Tokusan or practice discussions, but the usefulness of this just outweighs it to me that what Juryu said is, it's a much deeper level of trust, isn't it? To see that there's no mirror, there's no mirror stand, that all is void and no dust can alight. And to me, that makes me think of like just jumping off the cliff, just letting go of even the idea that I should be compassionate. And that's truer compassion. That's deepest. The deepest compassion is to not even have the idea of compassion. Not even try to free all beings, not try to free myself, not aspire, but just completely be with. And words definitely can't describe the void, not even Hui Ning's poem. Can't describe that level of compassion and wisdom. I can't say, I wish this had been an enlightenment story, that I had suddenly let everything drop when Shiryo said that, but it's not. It's something I'm chewing on. And in sum, I hope that I've given you some things to chew on as well. It's, and I've become cognizant that the time is 11:15, and before I ask whether you have questions, I want to take a quick like poll. Would people like to take like a moment and get some tea and do this as tea? Or would you rather keep going and do a Q&A, or do people have to go? So three choices. Zach.
You know I have to go at 11:30.
I do know that Zach has to go at 11:30.
I'm good with a Q&A and...
Okay, does anybody have to go right now?
No.
Okay, let's just continue as a Q&A.
Okay.
Thanks, I just wanted to check in. So, questions and comments, please.
Steve?
Liam?
I enjoyed your talk. And I just wanted to say, I really appreciate you always come up with some insight of a way that I hadn't thought of something before, like with the way of seeing the chanting as Dharma inquiry. It's something to chew on. So, thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So everyone's had a realization, then we're just sitting with it. Kate.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, and I will, excuse me, I have a frog in my throat. I also appreciated the insight about chanting and seeing that in that way. What I will also be chewing on that one. What I'm wondering is the luminous mirror wisdom. It just seems to me that because we exist in space and time, our understanding is limited because of that. And I wonder if the mirror is me or the mirror is out there or both, or thinking of it as both pushes me out of my intellectual understanding, I think. And it seems like what occurs for me, and as you were talking, I was thinking of this, there's the intellectual understanding, and then there's the body-mind which I think helps push me out of the way I move through the world each day. But then there's something more. And it seems like that is the place that you're lecturing about, that place that's even more than body mind. I don't know if that makes any sense at all. I'm just kind of exploring.
Can you, I have so many different, you brought up so many different things. So I'll start with just one of them. Something more. Can you point to something, and maybe you can't, but can you point to something that I said that leads you to use the words something more?
I think your understanding of just Dharma inquiry, you know, there was something more than the understanding you initially had.
Oh, okay. Okay, so, yeah, thank you. To me, it is working with not the intellectual concept of a mirror, but with, and as a caution, this is of course just a metaphor, but working with, maybe imagining this sometimes, like that everything, not just your own body and mind, but everything, if you're when you're looking at the wall, that wall is also a mirror, that you're seeing both the thing and the reflection at the same time. That everything is reflecting everything. And that's actually impossible intellectually. You have to like kind of let go of trying to be too literal about it. Another thing is that we can have realization when we're in our very practice. And it doesn't always have to come to the conscious mind. And in fact, often it doesn't. One of our sutras says something to the effect of realization is not in our perception. It is not in our conscious mind. That's always struck me as a little too much of a dichotomy, like the path is easy, just don't discriminate. But it gets me. You know, I'm doing this, but I'll never feel it, even if I realize it. What's the point? You know, that comes up. But I think that makes it important to also have as much deep trust as possible that even if you don't fully see it consciously in time and in space, that there's connection. Just accept it. And by sitting, we're accepting it in our bodies. And by acting with compassion, we're manifesting it in our relationships. And as everything, as something changes, here's a thought, here's a body mind. And then the new one, as I say to this one, I'm here. I want to free you from suffering. It changes, maybe because it's not suffering anymore, or maybe because something else wants attention, and then move to that. Just like if you move your hands in front of a mirror, the mirror doesn't like, it'll see everything moving in front of it. So, I think I need to end, but does that answer you, Kate?
Yeah, it's very useful. Thank you.
Liam, you're muted.
Beings are numberless. I evolve to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I evolve to end them. Dharma gates are boundless.
I vow to enter them.